Blog Talk Radio.
And that's right, it's time for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Hope everybody's had a great week so far. We are on a special day this week because we will all out be on assignment on our normal time of tomorrow. But, of course, I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill, and the King ATLian, Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy.
I'm doing good, Jeremy.
Well, that is always a good thing. As much as I wanted to say there wasn't a lot to talk about this week, a handful of things have kind of popped up in the last couple hours or so, and we'll get to some of those here soon. I got a couple things I was going to pose to you guys, and of course we'll have to go over our picks, which, Coach, you are leading in these picks right now. Me and Reg, you're 2-2. You are 3-1, given that Indianapolis picked up that victory.
Yeah, I figured that that was a game that was going to separate us a little bit. I felt confident with what Indy could do.
Yeah, apparently the Colts are a little better than I thought they were.
Yeah, you're right. Cincinnati was missing quite a few of their players, but okay.
Well, you know, regardless, it is what it is. And, you know, we'll actually start by reviewing that game, the Cincinnati Bengals traveling to Indianapolis for the Colts. Bengals were only able to put up 10 points, which was 17 fewer than they needed to win the game, and Colts with the big victory there. What are some of you guys' takeaways you have on that game?
Well, for me, it's obvious that Andy Dalton might not be the answer if it wasn't clear before. They may have to take a look at that or find someone that can help kind of bring him along. But more importantly, they need someone else other than A.J. Green. And that should be very, very clear to Cincinnati.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the reason why I took that game is because as I've watched Mr. Dalton over the season, he only has one receiver that he's most comfortable with going to. It doesn't mean that he doesn't do ball distribution, if you will, but he's only comfortable with A.J. Green. And as I looked at it toward the end of the season, that became more difficult for him to do as far as getting the ball to Mr. Green. And eventually he gets hurt, he's out the game. Now there's no safety valve for him. Although they have a very good running game, and I thought that the offensive coordinator would have probably did a little something there different as far as some swing passes and some things out of the backfield with the running backs to kind of keep his mechanics there and force him to look a little bit different. At the end of the day, if he doesn't have A.J. Green on the field, he just doesn't deliver like that. And I'm not quite sure if he's that type of quarterback that could push that team to the next level personally.
Yep, I definitely agree with both you guys on that one. And my thing was, is playoff game or not, pretty much about midway through the fourth, it was pretty obvious that Cincinnati was not going to probably be able to overtake this game. You know, if I'm Marvin Lewis, I give the backup. I give A.J. McCarron a shot just to see what I have because he hasn't got to play much this year, if any at all. At least going into, you know, training camp, you could show Dalton that we can show you the door if this kid can step up and play.
Yeah, that was my thought process as well, is that, you know, let's see what the kid has. I mean, he's a winner, if nothing else. There are a lot of people, and I got a chance to speak to one of our favorite Cincinnati Bengal fans here the other day, and he's not convinced on Mr. McCarron. And I know a lot of people that are that way. They're just They're saying, hey, he just had the pieces around him in Alabama. But like I told him, you know, the guy knows how to win regardless. So you're already on the plus side of things with him.
Yeah, well, and go ahead, Coach.
I'm sorry, Jim. My take on that, Reggie, is this. Those fans are absolutely right. McCarron probably has a little more in the gas tank right now because he's young. But again, at Alabama, he did have a lot of pieces around him. And I think that's why he's in a, you know, in Cincinnati. I don't think he's going to be able to take anything from Dawson other than the fact that he'll be able to challenge him at the position. But down the stretch, I'm not quite sure if they're going to even get the same thing out of him. They need a true quarterback with a lot more athleticism and the ability to scramble a little bit and can extend play. And either one of those guys can't give you that right now.
Well, and I'll give Marvin Lewis credit. In order for him to go to A.J. McCarron, he would have to skip over the actual backup, Jason Campbell. So it would be a blatant show that you're trying to see what you have out of McCarron. But, you know, to me, that's a garbage time game, and during garbage time is when you try to see something out of a player that you haven't seen yet. And, you know, with him not going there, maybe he doesn't feel that he's ready to try to take that role over. But in the odd turn of events, the thing that we talk about most is the losing team in this. So let's focus on the Colts for a second and the fact that I'm pretty sure you guys saw it. If you didn't see it live, you probably saw the replay. The pass, as Andrew Luck is getting tackled and the guy's pulling him down by his leg, he falls forward right at the line of scrimmage and throws a back corner end zone fade perfectly to Moncrief. And I don't know how many quarterbacks make that throw standing up, but he's falling forward off balance. What did you guys think of that throw?
Yeah, I did see that throw, and they kept replaying it. And again, it's a testament to what I think everybody has always kind of said about this guy. I didn't believe it until I saw him actually really play a full season last year, that he has all the tools that it takes to actually win. It's just a matter of if this year he had a few ups and downs, threw a little bit more interceptions than he usually does or has done in the past. But, I mean, I wasn't surprised. I mean, those are the types of plays that Luck has been making his entire career.
Yeah, I agree. Mr. Luck most definitely is worth the market value. I think that's why the Colts had no problem with letting Peyton Manning go as a result of that. He didn't even need to hang around much after that because I think Peyton knows what was in his kid as well. So, I mean, he's one of those young quarterbacks that in another 3 years you'll be talking about if he can stay healthy like Brady and some of those other quarterbacks that are out there right now. You know, that's putting him in a high place on the totem pole, but some of those guys would have retired by that time. And trust me, if he can stay healthy, he's that type of quarterback that can lead a team. He most definitely is proven.
Yeah, and obviously the gaping hole on their team is the fact that they have no run game. The Trent Richardson experience should already be over. But in focusing back on Luck, I started thinking about this the other day. If you look at the top quarterbacks in the league and even the cast of characters that are in that next tier as far as could be the future, for the most part, these guys are pretty boring. They're pretty quiet. They're pretty boring. Aside from Peyton being on all the pizza commercials, I mean, Peyton Manning is usually a pretty reserved and quiet guy. You don't hear much from. Brady may party, but you don't ever hear about it. He's always well-dressed, well-spoken, that kind of thing. Aaron Rodgers, Coach, you've even said a lot of times, is one of the quietest people on the planet, regardless of what commercial he may be in. So that Drew Brees is actually pretty quiet as well. You go to this next tier of people that maybe it's Andrew Luck, who is a very just very basic person, and that's not an intelligence thing. That's just he's very quiet and to himself. He gives you short answers. And I guess you'd have to put Russell Wilson in this as well. It's these loud characters that, you know, the Manziels, the Kaepernicks, we're not quite sure how they're going to shake out. We don't know if they're going to be this next tier.
Yeah, and it's almost like that's kind of that's what the NFL wants. I mean, from a standpoint of visibility and reputation, I think they're okay with that. Although with Mr. Kaepernick, I will say this: I was pleasantly surprised to find out that he has employed the services of a few quarterbacks, but namely, I just lost his name.
Kurt Warner.
Guy from Arizona used to play for Arizona and the Rams.
Yeah, Kurt Warner.
Yeah, he just employed the services of Kurt Warner to work with him in the offseason. So I was surprised and pleasantly surprised to see that he's taking some responsibilities and maybe he's falling off his horse a little bit. But, yeah, it's kind of boring amongst these guys, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and that shows a little maturity on Kaepernick's part, just to follow up with you, Reggie, on what you're saying. You know, I've watched this young man. He is an athletic talent. Most definitely, but now the question is going to come with this price tag because now he's in jeopardy of losing Crabtree and Davis and Gore and some of these pieces that he had when he first walked into the league. So now the question is going to be what becomes of Kaepernick without a Harbaugh, without these pieces over time? And so he's smart enough now, or at least his team is smart enough now to realize get a quarterback that can teach him the things it's going to take to make him survive it for the long haul. And that's what I'm going to be carefully watching it over the next 2 years with Kaepernick.
Right, and that's a good thing because, again, he's known as that guy that potentially had that ego. A la, you know, I know some of us down here in Atlanta wish that during the heydays of Mr. Vic that he would have taken a similar approach. And kind of knocked himself off of his own soapbox, if you will, and it just never happened. So from that perspective, I was really glad to see that he had reached out, and he has at least, again, like you said, Coach, taken some maturity or shown some maturity and saying, hey, you know I need to get better despite the fact that I have signed this $100 million contract.
Well, the quick thing on Vic, I just wish he'd learn to read at least one defense before he gets out of the league, but that could be a whole nother tirade unto itself. Yeah, I like Kaepernick a good bit. I think he's actually a lot more grounded and he's very community-based. A lot like his off-the-field self is a lot more like Cam Newton is in Carolina. It's just so far his on-the-field is not quite there yet. But if the league is looking for another quiet quarterback to maybe be join these two in the next tier, then, you know, Tampa Bay with that number one pick, Marcus Mariota's is jumping off the page as far as a very quiet, laid-back, just good head on his shoulders, great work ethic type guy.
Yeah, I'm not convinced with Mariota yet. I mean, I've seen what he can do at the college level, but the speed of the NFL is always very different. And say what you want about Mr. Winston. Hey, when it's game time, that guy straps it up. I mean, regardless. So, I mean, he's got some polishing to do, and he's got some changes to make. But if I'm Lovie Smith, I think I'd go after Winston before Mariota.
Well, and real quick before you chime in there, Coach, I'm going to take one of your words here for Jameis Winston. I think the tag gamer is absolutely what Jameis Winston is.
Yeah, I agree. He's a game type of player. He's a gamer. Meaning that he's not going to be a great practice squad player. The only problem with it, Reggie, is he's going to have not only an offensive coordinator that understands it, but his position coach who can really chime in too. Because the one thing that concerns about Winston right now is that he tends to fade in and out. And I think that if you saw it in one of the games that Florida State played, I don't know if it was Tech, and it could have been the Tech game, but there was a candid moment that was caught in time where Coach Jimbo Fisher mouths to him, let me call the game. So my concern right there is not can he be coached, but what does he respect? And I think that Tampa Bay needs to make that pick with him because I don't think him entering the league anywhere else right now without the respect level being there, and I think he does have that respect for Coach Smith, will allow him the room to grow like that. I'm very concerned that if he ends up anywhere else without a veteran coach, it can be very detrimental to his career.
And you know what, to that point, Coach, I meant to talk to you about that off air. I'd actually seen a broadcast or an analysis where they went back to that Tech game and to that very moment that you spoke about, and I can't – it may have been Ron Jaworski that had brought up that very point, But what Ron Jaworski did was go back and look at the film to what Jameis had actually checked down and changed the play to, and the play worked, as opposed to what Jimbo had called would not have worked. So the question came up, how much of that was, hey, this guy's really seeing the field, and he saw something that he felt like he needed to change, and that was kind of the leader in him. Yeah, he defied Jimbo, but, you know, again, sometimes you got to let a guy's natural talents just be that. So I agree with you. I'm a little nervous about him being in Florida with obviously everything that he's had to deal with in the state of Florida. The next obvious place would be Tennessee. And I think about that comment that you've made often about Atlanta and some other cities, big-name cities. You know, how much of the noise can he endure? Does he need that small market environment where there's nothing else but football for him to thrive in?
Yeah, I think that's what he needs, honestly. I think that if you put him in the big lights right now, it can possibly be a little overwhelming. Hopefully he has a good team around him, and I'm sure that he does. And I wish him the best of luck as he makes his journey into the National Football League. But those, you know, there's another thing, too, that I watched in him, and I watched it in this last game that they played bowl-wise. I noticed that, and I didn't know this about him because I really didn't look that deep into, you know, something else sports-wise. As it pertains to him, my understanding that he plays baseball, and I can see that in the way that he throws the ball now. If you notice when he does his five-step drops and he gets ready to release, if you watch most quarterbacks, it's one fluent release. But with him, it's more like it's a glitch. It's about a half a second glitch before he releases, and the defensive coordinator for Oregon saw that, and that's why they were all over those routes. If you go back and look at when he does the dropbacks and he gets ready to release the ball, it's like, you know how you see quarterbacks that pump and then let go? He kind of has that natural little glitch, and maybe that's because, and I don't know if he's a pitcher or not, and I'm assuming that he might have been at Florida State, but coming off the mound and coming down, you can see that little glitch in his throw in that mechanics, and that's why they were able to jump through all of those routes, just so that you guys would know.
Yeah, somewhat similar to Byron Leftwich, and yeah, he was a pitcher with Florida State.
Okay, see, there you have it. That's what happens with most pitchers that convert to quarterbacks. They have a small glitch, whether it's a curveball, whatever his natural pitch is, fastball. And I don't know all the mechanics of baseball, nor the pitches that well, but that's what that glitch is, and that's why his release is the way that it is.
That actually makes a lot of sense. And obviously, Jameis Winston, or at least his dad, announced that he'll be in the upcoming draft, so we'll have to see exactly who takes the flyer on him. We did say that Indianapolis is moving on, and as far as the other AFC team moving on, I was actually pretty surprised that the Baltimore Ravens took care of Pittsburgh the way they did. And actually, on the sheet as I was writing down the picks last week, I went ahead and wrote out my four while you guys were making a pick. And I, even though I picked Pittsburgh, I wrote down Baltimore to start with and then scribbled it out and put Pittsburgh as my pick. For some reason, I had written them down. I probably should have went with my instincts there. But what did you guys see in this game, and did you learn anything new about Pittsburgh, or is this pretty much the Steelers that we've seen all year?
I think this is pretty much the Steelers that we've seen all year for the most part. I think they obviously, it should be a glaring obvious point that they need to do some serious rebuilding on the defensive side. They're a little long in the tooth in their secondary, and they probably need some more impact players up front. And more importantly, what I noticed, and I think everyone kind of saw, is without Le'Veon Bell, I think he was the difference maker from the offensive perspective, in that they just didn't have that running game to offset anything else that was going on against, especially against that front four that Baltimore has, which is vicious up front. So that I think they definitely need to make sure they solidify a second backup running back behind Le'Veon, and they definitely need to address, if nothing else, their secondary for next year.
Yeah, as you guys know, that Coach LeBeau is one of those coaches that can basically form a team. I think he willed them this year with a lot of injuries and a lot of age. I think what happened in this particular game, and again, we're talking about leadership, and I was pleasantly surprised to see Baltimore's quarterback step up the way that he did. It showed true leadership. It showed how he's earning his money. It shows the mark of a champion. But I'm going to tell you where I think Pittsburgh lost this game, honestly. If you go back and you look at the play where Ben Roethlisberger takes the concussion, okay, and also Heath Miller takes a concussion. They both go out the game. The quarterback that comes in is doing a good job of marching them down the field and puts them in position to possibly, you know, make a score here and then go kick the onside. What happens in this game that people did not recognize is that Roethlisberger puts himself back into the game. Now, as we all know, we're not medical doctors, but we do know the process of the field evaluation for concussions and then a medical evaluation that takes place, you know, back in the locker room if they think if you somehow fail the field observation. The problem with that was that wasn't long enough. Normally you see that process, and it's normally two offensive series. Well, what people did not understand was that the backup quarterback ran off the field because Roethlisberger ran on, and they were going to get 12 men on the field, and it was going to push them back. And now it was going to be more difficult to make that play. So he comes back in, not finishing the evaluation, and throws the interception immediately. The look on Coach Tomlin's face is like, how did he get back into the game, and why didn't anybody have his helmet problem? Now, I can't speak for Coach Tomlin, but the look on his face was, what just happened? Because I don't think he was expecting him to be in the game at that moment. And I think that played a big role in a lot of things that we need. And again, to address what you were saying, Reginald, they need a lot of help on defense. So hopefully they can make a lot of trades, get some, you know, some restructuring going on, and they need like four or five players to come through that organization right now to solidify them for next year.
Yeah, I saw that Roethlisberger thing, and they were showing him doing the test or whatever, and I counted it was about, I want to say it was about 37 seconds or something like that, as they were, from the time he come off, was being evaluated. I was explaining to the people around me, I said, yeah, that's the concussion test. You do the on-field. If you don't give good enough answers or if there's any suspicion whatsoever, he's about to go to the locker room. And you could just see he was as glazed over as he could be. He might as well have had four pitchers of beer at that point. He was that glazed over. And still giving them answers, I guess. But, yeah, I agree. I looked at Tomlin's face when he looked up real quick and he went, why is he back in the game? And they cut away at the last second on the camera, but it looks like he turns to two or three coaches beside him and said, how did he get back in? And all they did was turn around to the trainer behind there, and the trainer went, he walked off.
Wow. Yeah, I was definitely surprised to see him back in so soon, and he still didn't have that look like he had it all. Wow. That's gonna change some things, I'm sure, as it relates to the concussion protocol and how soon a player can come back. Maybe that make that a fast rule, like you said, Coach, that it's, you know, has to be two offensive series or however the number is to prevent that from happening in the future.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen, guys, and I'm predicting this. I don't know if it's going to happen as quick as next season. But I think what they'll do is immediately march those players to the back so that something like that won't happen again. Because, again, if he goes out here and takes another hit like that, and he, you know, they haven't even finished their on-field evaluation of him, I mean, what could have happened with that? You know, he could have been knocked completely out, the next go round. And so I think from a liability standpoint, I think what will happen moving forward is that they will immediately take those players in the back, you know, and do the evaluation in the medical room.
Yeah, which will, of course, make it to where players start to condition themselves to I know Troy Polamalu was one who had been vocal about saying a lot of times they'll grab their ankle or they'll grab their leg or something like that if they got hit in the head, and they'll say it's a different kind of injury so that they can kind of play it off. So, if you know, unless you know the guy took a shot to the head, if he comes to the sideline, instead of saying, oh, I got hit in the head, he'll be like, yeah, I just dinged my elbow or something. So, they're going to have to reform that of some kind. And, Coach, I do like your idea of just immediately taking them to the back. Whether they scan them or not then is up to them and the NFL and cameras that could show that. But they got to do something. That could have been a really bad scenario for Roethlisberger.
Absolutely.
But that does set up with the 30-17 victory. of the Ravens over the Steelers. That sets up the Ravens. We'll talk about their opponent this week here in a minute, as well as Indianapolis. So that set the AFC challengers for the week. As far as the NFC, what really, it played out the way that I thought it would, but at the same time, I didn't quite think Carolina would be as strong as they were. The Panthers defeating the Cardinals 27-16. It actually turned into a pretty good game, and even though Cam wasn't the same Cam he had been towards the last few weeks of the season, there were still moments when he made plays that I think only he could have made.
Yeah, I think what it showed to me is the way that he got harassed at a certain point by the Arizona Cardinal defense. I think Seattle's going to absolutely destroy him next week, and he's already hurt. He's going to be dealing with quite a different defense. And if Arizona has Drew Stanton or you know, their Carson Palmer, for instance, they don't win that game. Lindley was obviously not the right person for that, not to mention they didn't have any running game. So offensively, I mean, that's about the worst that I've seen Arizona play. But, yeah, he definitely made some plays, but he's not going to be able to run all over Seattle next week the same way he did Arizona.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he is, you know, he has shot his load, as we like to call it. I think he, you know, he's a phenomenal athlete, but his body, what his brain can do, his body I don't think can just do right now. I think Arizona has a young defense that can be very ferocious. I don't think they're going to try to knock him out the game, but I think after, you know, some of the hits that he's taken over the last couple of weeks and just what he's gone against with his body, I don't know if he's going to be able to sustain himself another week after that. If he does, he is truly Superman.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It will be interesting to see their matchup with Seattle this week. But as far as the Cardinals, one of their glaring weaknesses clearly is they need a little bit of running back help. They need to figure out the Larry Fitzgerald situation, and by far they've got to find a backup quarterback, if not a starter, if Palmer can't come back. I don't understand why Logan Thomas can't get any playing time. He couldn't have been any worse than Lindley was. Maybe he could have completed a few passes or something. At that point, it was the same scenario. About halfway through the fourth quarter, I was wondering why Logan Thomas wasn't in to at least give him some experience in a game, and I know he didn't do that well this year anyway, but at least going into camp, you can kind of go, okay, he may could be the backup this year.
Yeah, I was really surprised with the Logan Thomas situation. I like you, Jeremy. I felt like he couldn't have done any worse than what Lindley has done. I don't know what happened in practice or behind the scenes that kept that move from happening. But, yeah, they're definitely going to have to address, I think, their quarterback situation in general, because you know, they've of course signed Carson Palmer to this extension. This is the second time he's kind of sustained this type of injury that he's had. And I'm not sure that he's that guy that you want to, you know, just hand the keys to the franchise to, as Drew Stanton is in the same way. I think Drew Stanton is okay for your backup position, but I still think they need to go and find that guy to kind of lead, take the helm. And now, like you said, they're probably going to lose Fitzgerald this year, so they're going to have to address the offensive side in general. I think defense they're going to be fine unless they lose Ty Bowles, and then you know, so they got a couple of different things scenarios going on. But Bruce Arians is a good coach, and I think they'll be able to pick it up.
Yeah, I agree. I think most definitely they have to address the quarterback position first and foremost. I don't think they have anything on the roster besides Palmer that's going to be there. And then the question is going to be whether or not he comes back. You know, how long will this injury keep him out? You know, he's been hurt severely for the last couple of years. Also, with the receiving core, they most definitely have to do something with that. I don't think Fitzgerald will stick it out any longer in Arizona. I think this was the game
that pretty much put the period behind the end of the sentence for him, so to speak, because he's just tired of getting so close but yet still being so far. So Arizona has a lot to do, and I do agree, Reginald, that defensively they'll be okay, but if they lose Todd Bowles, it's going to be a whole different type of scenario that takes place with that.
Yeah, and as far as it's to me, between who's in the draft up to this point and who's going to be a free agent, at least as far as the ones we possibly know of, it's a real down year if you need a big quarterback. Probably the best case scenario as far as somebody you could look at and actually look at the game tape on, Mark Sanchez is probably going to get paid by somebody. So Arizona might be in the Mark Sanchez market.
Another person that I could see Arizona, if I were them, making a big play for would be Brian Hoyer. I think he's also another guy that they could go in and do some and maybe take a look at as well.
Yeah, I think Hoyer is a better Arizona than by far than Sanchez. I think Hoyer, if he's available and they can make the dollars make sense, you know, for the lack of better terms, I think he'll be a better fit for him.
Yeah, those are pretty much the two leading candidates going into everything, and you know, Cleveland's got to get their stuff together as well. But that'll be another show. Panthers did have the victory, 27-16, and. Whether you felt one way or the other about Cam, he's still in the playoffs, and he's still pretty exciting to watch. Now, that leaves us to this other game that happened. It turned out to be the most controversial, which we all kind of thought it might be. But the Lions at the Cowboys. Now, without getting into the pass interference, no call, what did you guys think about this game?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to talk about it without talking about that call, but I'll try to. I mean, it was evenly matched. I will tell you this from the fan of the home team here. If there was ever a time that Ndamukong Suh showed his dominance, this game was it. He absolutely single-handedly, I think, changed the complexity defensively for Detroit. I think that Tony Romo is also showed some courage back there, as has DeMarco Murray. They were able to find a way to isolate Dez Bryant a little bit more, but then you had the other kid on the other side that actually showed up, Johnson, I believe his name was, and really pick up the pace on that opposite side. So I was a little bit more surprised to see Dallas play as well as they did. With the kind of the defensive scheme that was put together by Mr. Austin up there in Detroit. So, I mean, Dallas is okay. I still don't see them beating Green Bay in the Frozen Tundra unless Aaron Rodgers does not play. But I was definitely surprised to see Dallas fight back the way they did.
Yeah, I think, again, Reggie, I have to hear what you said about looking at that play, because that was the difference maker in the game. However, I think what helped Dallas win the game was the fact that Dez Bryant was willing to not be Dez Bryant for a moment. I think he realized there was something bigger on the plate or at stake other than him getting receptions. I think that Dallas bounced back a lot. I think Detroit did a phenomenal job again to Romo, which proved, although with the injuries, pocket quarterbacks are almost a thing of the past in the National Football League. The game is entirely too fast for you to stand there in the pocket and take those type of hits. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, guys, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think he would have sacked like six times in the game. And most of those sacks came clean. The one that Sue had that he backed into actually shows the strength of Sue and his ability to be able to get the quarterbacks. I mean, to literally be falling to the ground and pull a quarterback to the ground with one hand shows tremendous amount of strength, balance, and his athleticism. So, again, I was a little surprised that it went the way that it did, although I felt that, you know, overall that Dallas would probably use their three-headed monster, and I think I mentioned that last week. I think what they did do and what they came to realize is that they are who they are. And they got away from the running game, and that put the game in jeopardy for them. And when they went back to the running game, I think that's what kind of, you know, kind of putting them back into the swing of it in that last play with Lawrence is what sealed the faith.
Yeah, to me, we learned a lot about Dallas, but I learned a lot about Detroit. Not only are they more solid and a lot closer to really competing than I thought, but they proved that, A, they can play without Calvin Johnson, who really wasn't that big of a factor, and it could be a factor in their offseason moves, and, B, they proved that they really can't play without Ndamukong Suh because he is the heart and soul and leader of this defense, and hopefully they figure out a way to restructure and keep him because without him, let's see, I heard a stat earlier, I think it was yesterday that I heard it from Mike Florio or somebody from one of the other media outlets. Ndamukong Suh is set to be a free agent. Nick Fairley, Mosley, and then their fourth guy on the depth chart is as well. They're only going to have a guy who was a rookie this year and really didn't get to play a whole lot, is the only interior defensive lineman on the books as of next year. So they're going to have to figure something out at defensive tackle.
Yeah, I think that regardless of whatever they offer Mr. Suh, short of using the franchise tag on him, which I guess isn't out of the question, I don't think he stays in Detroit next year.
I believe the franchise tag number for him would be in the $23 million range, so they may stay away from that.
Right, and again, they still have Calvin Johnson on the books anyway for about that much as well. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough offseason for them. They're going to lose that guy, and I don't think Fairley has shown that he can't handle the load that Suh has been able to. And not only handling the load, but because Suh demands so much up front, he's been allowing guys like Levy and some of those other guys off the edges to really, really wreak havoc on quarterbacks as well.
Yeah, Detroit has a good problem, as I like to call it. How are they going to figure out how to keep their dominant players? And so I think one of the things they have to sit down and look at their salary cap and see if they can make it work. I'm sure they've had some conversations with Suh already throughout the season, as well as Calvin Johnson. So it'll be interesting to see what they come out with before, you know, getting ready to go toward the draft.
Yeah, and then, everybody else has gotten to give their two cents about it. So for a few quick minutes, we will talk about the pass interference no call. I've heard both sides of this one. I've seen the replay a lot more times than I really cared to. My initial reaction when I saw it was that I thought it was a penalty. When I saw the replay about the 4 billionth time, I'm almost convinced now that it really wasn't and that it was a good pickup. My other concern was the Dez Bryant running on the field without a helmet. Not that would have been a penalty, because technically it's not. My thing is, it's about player safety, and if you don't say something to the first player to do it, what's going to stop 17 players from arguing a call next week?
Right, and I think that's the problem that I had about the call, the pickup. As I go back and look at it, it wasn't a pass interference. I think the face guarding and so forth, and maybe there could have been another lesser penalty that could have been called. And even my qualm with it was, never before have I ever seen that type of penalty being thrown, flag being thrown out, the ref announcing it, and then picking the flag up. And that's where I had the issue with it all.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the problem with the penalty is not penalties, is the fact that the flag was picked up so tremendously late after the call was made. I think that's the one thing that the competition committee most definitely will be looking at in the offseason. That was a game changer. Whether people realize it or not, it was a game changer.
Oh, absolutely. Especially then you have the great TMZ releasing pics of the either the son or the head of officiating getting off of the Dallas Cowboy party bus before the game. I mean, it's just caused all kinds of controversy.
Yeah, you'd be referring to Dean Blandino, who is the head of officiating for the NFL, and that would not be the first time he's been on the bus. He's actually been on it earlier this year, earlier this season. I can't think of the other time, but there's been a handful of people to get off that particular party bus. So I guess if we're ever in the same town as the bus, we need to get on and see what's going on up there.
Absolutely. But you know what, as I've been thinking about this too, guys, and this is something that I think I've heard quietly some players, and I won't call them out, but at any rate, we've had some private conversations before, and that is becoming the trend and the issue. And, Coach, I know you spoke about, you know the CBA and why a lot of players were kind of upset that process was rushed through because you have things like this. But it's like, you know, you go back to the Jim Irsay thing. You go back to even when Jerry Jones came out and had these pics, these pictures that were released, and it kind of disappeared. I don't think anybody even really realized that there was some mini scandal going on. But it's like the NFL or the shield side of it, as I like to call it, is being allowed to get away with some pretty, pretty grimy type events here and without repercussion. And yet, you know, you got a player who, you know, gets involved in the smallest of incidents and or in an incident such as Mr. Peterson that was kind of on the fence, whichever way you chose. And the guy loses his whole year of eligibility and football checks and what have you, yet on the shield side, none of this stuff has happened to these people. So I'm wondering how the league is going to have to clean up themselves this year, because this has been a bad year for the shield side of the league.
I don't disagree, Rich. I think there's been a lot of problems that will be addressed. The thing that we have now that we didn't have back then is a lot of technology, social media, people with smartphones. So no one is hidden anymore. The question is what are the results? And I think that's where the pressure has been placed on the commissioner, and I think that's where a lot of the players' voices have been heard now, is the fact that now you have a situation where you have a clear list of players who've been suspended, fined, what have you, for various reasons, and it's been quick results to that. But again, when you had, you know, the owner of the Colts and some other things that happened this year, it's one of those touchy subjects, and it's going to be real interesting to see how the commissioner handles the executive side of this, if you will.
Yeah, that is that's something they're going to have to address for a lot of reasons, and thanks to technology and smartphones and all that fun stuff, it is definitely a different kind of league. Just ponder this one for a second. If there would have been this kind of social media and technology going on back in the days of, you know, Michael Irvin and Deion Sanders, or back in the Kenny Stabler, Joe Namath days, I mean, these guys may not have had careers.
Yeah, true. Again, it's just the nature of where they're at and where they fell in history. I agree with you. It could have been just as bad, if not worse. But bottom line is it's here. It's only going to get, you know, having obviously working in that field on a regular capacity. They're only coming up, or we are only coming up, with bigger and brighter ideas. And with the invention of wearables and watches and glasses and all of these things now, they're able to take pictures and still video, and you not even know it. It's going to be tough. I mean, agents, Coach, I know you're kind of delving into that world a little bit. Hey, you guys are going to have to start training these players to be on the lookout, because they're going to be even that more focused on trying to capture these types of activities. It's unfortunate, but it just kind of is what it is.
What I can tell you now, Reginald, one of the things that I learned as a young coach in this business was something that Coach Holt said many years ago. If you don't want it on the front page of the paper, if it's going to embarrass yourself, your family, or the organization, don't do it.
I think that's great advice. And at times I really wish that a lot of these kids and even adults – to that point, veterans of the league would actually learn that.
Yeah, he's
right.
Very lucky. Got the 21-year-old kid with a $10 million contract. I mean, it's kind of the yin and the yang here.
Yeah, definitely that it is. And a lot of people had wrote in and sent us messages on social media about a coaching vacancy update. The best thing is you guys know all the names by now. For the most part, teams have made at least their first round of interviews. I know Rex Ryan is getting a callback interview from the Falcons as soon as he finishes up his last round of interviews. But pretty much you're going to see everybody narrow it down to three or four candidates, and we'll just have to go from there as far as the coaching updates.
Well, you know what is interesting, Jeremy, as we get on the other side of the segment here, there have been quite a few developments here recently as it relates to the Falcons that have started to show maybe the hand of Arthur Blank and what's about to happen here. But I do honestly believe that, especially going back to the fact that Corn Ferry and that organization only works with one team in the offseason, I think Arthur Blank made that move. And they announced to the league candidly, you know, with GM searches and things of that nature, to a few teams. I think a lot of teams are kind of waiting to see what Atlanta's going to do and what they were going to do. And I think that once Atlanta makes their hire, then you'll see a lot more of these vacancies start to fill up.
Yeah, I do feel like Atlanta's going to be one of the first two teams to do anything. And we'll get more into those developments because, trust me, it is on my list to address with all the things that have happened. But, like I said, that's just the coaching vacancy update. And we'll go ahead and make our picks. And maybe there will be some prizes in here, surprises as we go through these. We'll start first with the Baltimore Ravens coming fresh off that victory over Pittsburgh as they go up to New England to Gillette Field to take on the Patriots. Reggie, who do you have in this one?
Oh, man, watching Baltimore this week against Pittsburgh, that defense, my goodness, that defense. I know that Tom Brady is Tom Brady, but coming off that bye, I'm not necessarily sure they can withstand. I'm actually going to pick the upset. I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh, trust me, I got some upsets coming, but that's honestly not one of them. Even though the Ravens are the Achilles heel of the Patriots playoffs in recent years, and I do like the way Flacco and this defense is playing. They are playing a lot like the last time they hoisted a trophy. I actually got New England in this one. So, Coach, who do you have?
You know what? This is one of those toss-up games. Both of these quarterbacks are more than capable, in my opinion. I think that when it comes down to it all, defense wins championships. I don't know if New England has a defense that could sustain them down the stretch. They would need to outscore their opponent. Again, it's hard to win up there, and I don't know what their injuries look like going into this game. But, you know, this is a tough one for me to pick, guys. But I think if I have to – I know I have to choose a team, I think I'm going to have to possibly go with
Well, before you pick it, I can update you about the Patriots' injuries. Every player practiced today. Nobody sat out injured.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to go with New England in this one. I think that it's going to be tough to beat them at home. I just think that there's a switch that Tom Brady turns on and everyone else turns on with him, and I think they watch that game very closely. So they're by no means taking this lightly with Baltimore coming in because they are a championship team as well.
Yep, definitely so. Okay. And I'll move to the next game because it'll complete a thought that I was going to throw out a minute ago. The Dallas Cowboys at the Green Bay Packers. Now, if you remember preseason, my Super Bowl pick, and part of why I picked New England a while ago, my Super Bowl pick is the Green Bay Packers defeating the New England Patriots. So, as much as I do feel like if anybody could go up to Lambeau and steal a victory, it would be Dallas, I'm going to have to go Green Bay on this one just to keep my possible Super Bowl pick intact. Coach, who do you have?
By far, I want to take Green Bay in this game. I think it's very hard to win at Lambeau. They've proven it, although Dallas, you know, I think they're
perfect on the road. I don't think that, to be honest with you, I don't think that Romo's body is going to be able to hold up in that weather. I think they got some plans for him. I think they saw what Detroit did, and they're going to do some of the similar things, and I think it's going to be much more frustrating because it won't be in a controlled environment like a dome setting. So I'm taking Green Bay.
Okay, Reggie?
Yeah, I'm going Green Bay. I don't like what I've seen out of the reports about Aaron Rodgers and that calf, but I don't think he lets it keep him out of the game. I think he's there's no way he doesn't play in this game. So I'm definitely going Green Bay.
Because it's true.
You guys actually hear it this time?
Yeah, I did.
I did.
But I say, in a very last-minute thing, the file just got uploaded just a couple short seconds ago. But for now, that is our new Homer button. Every time we agree on a pick, you will hear...
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
So for now, that's our Homer button as far as when we agree. And we appreciate the technical staff working as hard as they did. We were having some trouble with some software. And like I said, it was literally... probably 3 or 4 minutes ago. Part of why I put the picks at the end. I was hoping we could get it loaded up. The next games we will go into. Man, they are both juicy for different reasons. Let's go. The Carolina Panthers are going to go up and take on the Seahawks and the 12th man up in Seattle. Coach, let's start with you.
Give me that again, Jeremy. I'm sorry I lost you for just a second.
It would be Carolina at Seattle.
Seattle, hands down. I think that Carolina has done all that they can do. And like I said, again, with all the injuries to Cam Newton, I don't foresee him being able to go to Seattle with that type of defense. I think you're going to see a lot of what you saw Detroit was able to do to Romo. That's what you're going to see Seattle do to Cam. And if he pulls this off, like I said, he will be a true Superman. But I don't think that they have enough on their side, personnel-wise, as guys begin to go down or injuries possibly plaguing the game. They don't have anything behind Cam that can help them, and receiving core-wise or anything else. So once they lose one or two guys in this or even playing against them, they just don't match up against Seattle in any aspect of the game. Seattle, hands down.
All right, Reggie?
Ditto, Coach Hill, Seattle. He's for all the reasons Coach said.
As much as it pains me, because I'm not the world's biggest Seattle fan, and I like Pete Carroll as a coach. I like Russell Wilson as a player. I'm actually a big Richard Sherman fan. I think if football didn't work out, I feel like the WWE would be a great venue for him. But, yeah, it pains me because I really want Cam to do well, but at the same time, like you guys said, I think this defense is going to eat him alive. So, for the second time this week.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
At some point, we'll figure out a better way to set up that clip. But we're double homering out so far. And it leaves us with the last game, which, oddly enough, I believe is a week one rematch, as the Indianapolis Colts are going to go take on the Denver Broncos. Reggie, who do you have in this one?
Oh, I'm going to have to go with Denver. This is one of those toss-ups again. You don't never really know what Denver team is going to show up. And I think they're another team that the bye kind of hurts them. But I'm going to go with Denver.
Coach?
I'm going with Denver strictly because of the experience of Peyton Manning. I think that he knows exactly what's at stake. I think this is his last run for it. And so I don't think that the Colts defense, although, you know, they're moderate at best, I don't think that they have enough to stop a Peyton Manning person. So it will most definitely be the Broncos.
Yeah, like I said, all year I haven't been impressed with the Colts all that much, even though Andrew Luck is still putting up borderline MVP-like numbers and just ridiculous throws that have become the norm. I think his ridiculous throws have become the norm the same way Odell Beckham Jr.'s catches have become the norm. But I've seen the decline of Denver over the last few weeks, and like I said, with the Colts kind of, I don't know. They don't. They're not as strong as I think. But as much as I'd love to hit that homer button one more time, I'm going to actually take the Indianapolis Colts. I feel like Andrew Luck is going to, in a way, snatch the baton or the throne away from Peyton here, and this is Peyton's last hurrah, in my opinion. They're going to have trouble keeping both Thomases next year contract-wise. They may have to franchise tag one of them. I really think they're going for broke this year because after this, they may have to blow up part of it and start over. I got Indianapolis. But to recap, obviously, me and Coach agree about New England over Baltimore. Reggie, you have Baltimore. I'm taking Indianapolis in the I guess that is an upset. I'm sure they're at least a 3 to 4 point dog in this one. You guys both have Denver, and, of course, we double homer out on Green Bay and Seattle. So just for the sake of it.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
I'm really enjoying that. We're gonna have to get some more sound bites on this.
I see you're having a ball with that one.
I am. Flashbacks to those middle school and high school plays where it was more fun to run the soundboard than it was to run my mouth. But basically that's going to do it for us as far as end zone this week. And on the other side of the break here, we'll definitely jump into some Falcon Zone stuff and also kind of the top themes going on in the other three cities in the NFC South. It's actually starting to be a pretty busy time down here in this division, and we'll try to catch you up on as much of it as we can. But for the King AT Alien, Reggie Walker, and the coach Haywood Hill, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. We'll see you guys on the other side for Falcon Zone. Jeremy the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. And that's right, it's time for the Falcon Zone. Welcome. Hope you're having a good week. I know we're having a good time. I am Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill, and the King AT Alien, Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing great, Jeremy.
I'm doing wonderful, Jeremy.
That is always good, as always. There's always a lot of stuff going on, and it's good that we can all be back again, and even though we'll all be on assignment tomorrow, it's a busy time around the studio. They've all got us out doing stuff. But since we are here with you today, like I teased on the other part, I do have some top stories going on in Tampa Bay, New Orleans, and Carolina a little bit. But first, do want to get into some Atlanta Falcons stuff. Just like I said in the other segment with End Zone, as far as the coaching search, the second wave of coaching finalists will be in within the next week to 10 days for sure. Rex Ryan is in the finalist group. I haven't heard some of the other ones that are, but I would imagine Todd Bowles is somewhere in the mix. Have you guys heard about anybody else?
Yeah, there have been quite a bit. They have pretty much interviewed everybody with the exception of Todd Bowles. He gets interviewed tomorrow. Doug Marrone has been in. Taron Austin from Detroit was in today. Josh McDaniels has been interviewed. They even interviewed Keith Armstrong, who is the current special teams coordinator for the Falcons. Obviously, with Rex Ryan, his interview was about 5 hours, just north of a five-hour interview that took place yesterday. So, yeah, everybody's been here. There have been some recent developments that have been announced here over the past in the past hour that kind of lends its hand. First of all, Jeremy, before we get there, I want to send out a Falcon Zone condolences to Arthur Blank, whose mother passed today. I haven't gotten a chance to get caught up on the story, but his mother did pass on today, so I wanted to send those condolences out to Mr. Blank and his family.
Yeah, absolutely, because we are all part of the Falcon family here, whether we officially work for the team or not. So definitely condolences out to his family.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So the development, gentlemen, has been that change as of in the front office, those changes in the front office that Arthur Blank was alluding to in so many of his statements. What has basically happened is, and the way they're touting it is really kind of funny, is that they're following the Baltimore Ravens model. That's how it's being touted to the media right now. But essentially what has happened is Scott Pioli has been placed in charge of scouting and drafting of players, more or less. Thomas Dimitroff has taken a bit of a demotion in that he will not be responsible for picking players. He has the quote-unquote final say-so, but mainly because he is the one responsible for the cap now. And on top of that, which is most important, and I think this is what kind of showed the hand of what's about to happen at the coaching side, the coach will report directly to Arthur Blank, not to the GM.
I'm pretty happy with that, actually. I think it breaks it up a little bit, and it makes it to where the coach knows that the only person technically directly above him is the owner, Arthur, who instead of a lot of coaches look over their shoulder and see an owner on one side, they look over the other shoulder and see a GM who sometimes overuses his power. So at least here it breaks it up.
Right, and it goes back to some earlier, as I go back to some earlier conversations and some earlier reports that kind of came out of there, after Smitty was let go or released, there was a report that was released that basically stated that oftentimes Coach Smith and Mike Nolan were on the same page as far as direction of the team, and Arthur Blank and Thomas Dimitroff were often on the opposite side of that. So there was a constant going back and forth between what they thought the right direction was. One example was Thomas Dimitroff wanted to desperately go after pass rushers in the free agency market versus Coach Smith, who felt like the defensive line should be built from the inside out. And coupled with that, Mike Nolan convinced or put out there that his schemes could cover up. He agreed with Coach Smith, and then B, he said the schemes and defense could generate pass rush. So those were the types of issues that were going on internally between those two. Now, coupled with that, there are reports that are saying that, you know, Rex Ryan made it very clear in his interviewing process that he felt like in New York that he was undermined quite a bit by the GM. And so a lot of the decisions that came from the GM on his behalf weren't necessarily the ones he wanted. So that was the media machine would have you believe that this change in the front office is a direct result of something that Rex Ryan needed to happen before they could move forward with the deal. So that's kind of one of the things that's coming out. And it also kind of speaks to going back to the turmoil between the previous regime. When people like myself were saying, well, why is he keeping Thomas Dimitroff around? And it sounds like his drafting philosophy, his free agent philosophy, matches that of Arthur Blank. And that would explain why he kept him around or has kept him around to this point. But it is definitely pretty clear that Dimitroff's going to be here regardless. He just won't have as much power and much say-so over personnel. And obviously now the coach reports directly to the GM, to Mr. Blank. I think that all in my mind, and I'll let you guys speak on it, I think that eliminates guys like Todd Bowles, Dan Quinn, those guys who are coordinators coming in as head coaches who may need a GM to kind of be that buffer. In my mind, that eliminates them possibly coming in as coaches. I know I gave you guys a lot there.
You did. Let's back up and let's talk about the Dimitrov situation. I think that the only reason why Dimitrov is there, Reginald, is because of his contract. I don't know what the terms of that contract may be. I think that if Mr. Blank tried to remove him right now, it might cost him. And I feel that he feels that he needs to be able to have an opportunity to clean up his mess because I paid you to do so. It is unprecedented to see Mr. Blank have, for the first time, a head coach report directly to him. This can be good and bad in the same breath. And what I mean by that is if he begins to dibble and dab a little too much in the football operational side of things, you know, it can become a distraction. And we've seen those distractions in the past with other owners who have, for lack of better terms, put themselves in the midst of football operations. I do think that what you said is holding true. I think that with that move, it will be a direct report versus a Buffett report, if you will, or a vanilla report. I think he saw a lot of that in his GM this year, and he began the process of correcting that. With that being said, Atlanta still has a lot of room this year to grow as far as the cap. I think they're going to make the cuts and trim the fat, if you will, very fast. Immediately, as soon as the door opens for them to start releasing players, they'll do so, and they'll go ahead and start structuring themselves around the draft. Now, the thing I do find interesting is that the final say-so on those players still will fall in the hands of Dimitrov, and I'm a little concerned with that because if you have shifted, if you will, if you've shifted all of that over to someone else, then the one thing you most definitely need to do is take that into consideration because if not, then you still have the same problem just in a different way.
Well, yeah, and let me be clear about that. The final say-so goes back to Dimitrov only for the purposes of a financial fit. Does it fit under the cap? Is his contract right? Not is he the right player from a, as I read it, not is he the right player from a skills perspective. That is not his call. His call is, this is the player I want. Does he fit in the cap that we have now? Is his contract friendly?
Now, let me ask you this. What happened to Mr. McKay doing that? Wasn't he doing that last year for the team, or did his positioning change?
Well, I mean, I think he'll still have some say-so in that. To be honest with you, Rich McKay is still with the Falcons for a couple of reasons, in my opinion. A, he has a very significant title within the NFL. I think he's part of the competition committee or high up on the competition, maybe even be the chairman at some point. The other thing is the stadium. Was his deal. That was all him. Obviously, the stadium's now apparently $400 million over budget, so he definitely has his hands full. And we'll talk about the PSL numbers that were released a little bit later for those fans out there who may or may not have heard about it. But I think he's got his hands full with that. And just, Jeremy, real quick before you chime in, I wanted to, from a business perspective, Coach, offer this as to why Mr. Blank is kind of taking this approach. One of the most effective business strategies, especially when you're at the top, is when you it is very difficult to run an efficient business in a pyramid or in a linear fashion, if you will. In the past, Arthur Blank had a GM. That GM had, you know, all these people reporting to him, and his only point of failure was that GM. Now, from the top, it's very difficult to see where your business is actually failing unless you adopt this model, which is more of a pyramid. So what he's doing, all Mr. Blank is doing, is saying I've got a coaching I have a coaching area, I have a scout area or GM area, or I have a personnel area. He has made someone directly responsible for each one of those areas, so that he can immediately realize what the breakdown is in his organization. So next year there will be no question if we don't have the right players. This isn't a coaching issue. This is a Scott Peori issue. Or we've got the right players, but we're not winning. This is a coaching issue. Or we're over the cap. This is directly a Thomas Dimitrov issue. So this is more of a business strategy than anything.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good business strategy. I like, because like you're saying, it's easy to now point a finger or knowing which back to pat, basically, based off what's going on. A little background on McKay. obviously, I used to follow the Buccaneers very closely for many years. He is the chairman of the NFL Competition Committee right now. And in the past 6 years, he served on the Management Council Working Group of the league, which helps advise on collective bargaining issues. And in fact, he was the main guy who made sure that the 2011 bargaining table went as good as it did, so that there wasn't as big a lockout.
So there you have it. I mean, I think again, McKay is probably one of those guys who's being considered for commissioner at some point. It would not surprise me. I think he was even being spoken about even before they brought Goodell in. So Arthur keeps him around for power. He has power behind the shield.
Yeah, that he does. And he is, I believe he's the only NFL executive or only current one who has been the person in charge of negotiations and the building of two NFL stadiums, because he did Raymond James Stadium, which is a beautiful stadium. If you haven't been to it, by far, try to catch a game in Tampa. It's got ridiculous views of the surrounding Tampa Bay area. And obviously the one in Atlanta now that he's the point person for. So if you need a stadium built, apparently you call McKay Construction here.
Absolutely. And I have had the pleasure of going to Raymond James quite a few times, and there is not a bad seat in the house. They're one of the very few stadiums that whether you're at the top or at the bottom, you still have a great vantage view of the field, and it is an absolutely beautiful stadium.
But
quite a bit going on in Falcon Land, but everything, in my opinion, seems to be pointing to Mr. Ryan being brought in as head coach. I think that all the rest of this stuff is semantics at this point.
Well, and as a quick tidbit on that, it's a little bit of trivia, since we haven't had trivia in a little while. I don't know if you guys read the AJC articles by Mr. Ledbetter, D. Orlando Ledbetter, the Atlanta Falcons beat writer for AJC. But
he posted
an article that brought a lot of things to my attention that I had forgotten and a few things I didn't know. Basically, the Rooney Rule when you interview for a new head coach is you have to interview at least one minority coach of some kind. It can be, you know, anything, basically, just to say that you're giving everybody a fair shot, that you're not trying to pick on a particular background or anything. And in the Falcons interviewing their special teams coach, they kind of take care of that, as well as just requesting information for Todd Bowles and Terrell Austin, as far as just requesting it. But going back to recent hires, recent coaching searches, it's kind of weird to see the coaching list that could have been chosen instead of the ones that were. And in the 2007 search, or the 2008 one where we got Mike Smith, do you guys have any idea who the other two leading candidates were at that point?
I believe it was Rex Ryan and Lovey Smith.
Coach, do you have a guess?
I want to say Dennis Green was a part of that, but I'm not sure.
As far as the main ones on this list here, I do agree that those people were probably in it. Leslie Frazier, who went on to coach Minnesota, and
right.
Jim Caldwell, who is currently in Detroit. Now, in that particular scenario, I like Mike Smith a little better than those two, so I'm okay with that one. In the search where they ended up with Mr. Bobby Petrino and the hot mess that he brings to the table sometimes, do you know who the Falcons had interviewed previously?
I cannot recall. That was such a bad time for me as a fan.
No.
That would be one Mike Singletary, which in that, if you could go back and redo that one, I think Mike Singletary would have been the head coach.
Yeah, and for the sake of not opening up my famous Campbell can of worms, I'm going to leave that one alone, Jeremy. I will digress on that topic.
I've got one more, and this one, I believe, had they hired this guy instead of who they did, I believe this guy would have still been the coach to this day, more than likely, and the team would have went a completely different direction. In the search that landed one Jim L. Mora. Everybody remembers Coach Mora.
Yep.
Some of us try to forget parts of it, but for the most part, he wasn't a bad coach. Do you know who the other leading candidate is? And I will say that this guy is on to his second team since this time.
Hmm. You threw me. I had a guess, but not until you said that. That threw me.
Coach, do you have a guess?
I have not a clue.
That would be one Tampa Bay Buccaneers coach, Lovie Smith. I feel like, this is just my thought on this, that had Lovie Smith been hired instead of Jim Mora, he might have still been the coach to this day, may have been a pretty long tenured, and this team would look a lot different.
Well, I would say this, too. I would add to that point, Jeremy, as well. I think that if Lovie Smith had become coach, I think Mike Vick would still have been finishing up his career here as a Falcon.
I absolutely agree on that one.
I agree with you.
But that was my shout-out to D. Orlando Ledbetter, who writes some cool articles. And
that's some good information.
Yeah, because I had forgotten some of the other coaching candidates in there, and I didn't know about the Lovie Smith thing. I didn't realize he was available back then. Obviously, he went to Chicago, and now he's coaching against our Falcons twice a year. But, you know, we'll have to see. I would love to see Rex Ryan move in here as well. I think he is the fit at this point.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff to that, and I know you want to delve into that a little bit too. And that, you know, we're going to obviously maybe seeing our former offensive coordinator down in Tampa Bay. Looks like he might be landing that job. Is that correct, Jeremy? Is that what you're hearing?
That is part of what I have heard, because the other major name that I was hearing Lovie was coming after besides Dirk Cutter was is it Brian Schottenheimer, the one who is now the University of Georgia offensive coordinator coming over from St. Louis.
Right, yeah, I did hear that he accepted the job at Georgia. So, yeah, that was interesting. And what was also interesting today, and this is also what kind of lends a hand to the whole Rex Ryan theory to Atlanta, is today Sean Payton announced that they are retaining Rob Ryan as their defensive coordinator in New Orleans. He just released that today. So although it's still not out of the question, there are a lot of analysts who are out there saying, calling Atlanta the new Ryan connection, with Rob Ryan, Rex Ryan as the head coach, and Matt Ryan as the quarterback. So it could still possibly happen, but it was just very interesting at the timing of everything as well.
Well, and I'll get back into my other Tampa Bay story in a minute, because the offensive coordinator search was actually, didn't we hit on them possibly intentional tanking last week? I think we talked about that.
Yep.
But, you know, they're not going to search into that or look into it, so people should drop it at this point. Let them pick which quarterback they want and go on with it. But as far as the Saints thing, that is one of the things I was going to get into is, Sean Payton has fired almost every coach except for, I believe, the defensive back coach and Rob Ryan, and in the process also announced that not only are they retaining him, but he is wanting to rebuild the team around Rob Ryan's scheme on defense, which is a completely different thing from any Sean Payton team normally. What do you guys think about that?
I'll echo what I just said. I think it is completely a ploy to keep him away from Atlanta. Period.
just like the Jarius Bird hiring.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what it was. They're picking up Jarius Bird was to keep Atlanta from picking him up. I think that's all it is. I think that if Atlanta was known to be hiring Todd Bowles, you'd probably see Rex Ryan out the door.
Yeah, it's very possible.
I think the thing that I find intriguing about all this is that has Coach Ryan in New Orleans accepted the contract? What was the terms of his contract? Was he on a 2-year deal? Was he on a 1-year deal? I mean, I'm not quite sure. And I do agree that that's to keep him out of Atlanta and not coaching with his brother. But at the end of the day, I mean, what was the structuring of the contract? I guess that's the question.
There isn't a contract. There hasn't been a discussion of an acceptance. There was just a discussion of the intent to keep him. So it's not a done deal yet.
So that means if his brother, then what that tells me is that if his brother gets the job in Atlanta, he's in Atlanta.
That's how I read it to it as well, Coach.
Wow, so this could really happen, and he's going to be smart enough to hold out just long enough until he knows from Rex what Rex is going to do.
And it may, also, again, timing is everything. They waited, then they finally make these front office changes, which, again, most analysts are saying are catering to some of the things that may have come out of Rex Ryan as far as one of his demands or desires. I think it's all kind of shaping up.
Yeah, it's no question that if Coach Rex Ryan gets the job, he will bring his brother along as the defensive coordinator, because what he has to do is focus on being the face of the Atlanta team and making sure that they get the right place and they are in there to win football games like they, you know, need to consistently. So I think that he's going to be the head coach. You're asking him now to make a decision on who comes in. A five-hour interview clearly states that we're working out some terms.
Right.
They're normally not that long. I think they've made their decision. They wanted to make sure that he was comfortable with some of the changes. I think he was instrumental in some of the changes, believe it or not, in the front office, to make room for the Ryan Hill to begin.
Right.
Yeah, and
it's exciting.
We already got into my Panther story, really, which was basically how good are these Panthers. I think we're going to see the extent of their run this week. As Seattle may carve them up pretty good. But as far as in the offseason, they only have a couple little small things to address, and they're going to be chugging along just as good as they were. But, you know, we kind of got into that before. I will say this before I let you get into your PSL talk, because I'm very interested in it as well. It was kind of confusing when I saw the press release there, Reggie. But if both Rob Ryan and Rex Ryan are coaches in Atlanta next year, I've already kind of secured my spot on being at the next Grilling with the Falcons, but I think you two should join me as well, because if we're talking about tailgating and our good friends, the ATL Falcoholics and Mark Cooper and, of course, Terrence Spires and the Game Changers, two of the more prominent groups, not only is it fun hanging out and tailgating with those guys, but if you got the Ryan brothers around a bunch of barbecue, I just feel like it's going to be a real good day.
Absolutely. And guys, to that point, I am actually looking into possibly getting the impact, the end zone tailgating going on next year. I'm actually considering that. I'm getting a lot of prodding from some people to kind of crank up my own little King ATLian thing going on. So we'll see how that works out.
We will definitely have our people call our people and go over specifics on those. But, yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. We might could even maybe do some pregame podcasting or something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Real quick, before I know we're getting to the end of the hour here, on the PSLs, Jeremy, the way it has been explained to me, and, again, this is still just what they are proposing, and more than likely it's going to pass, so they are significantly higher than what people thought. Typically in most stadiums, the club seating are usually your areas where you're going to get the most dollar amount for the tickets. So there's kind of two things. There's PSLs that have been announced as well as a significant ticket increase. For instance, for those fans who are in between the 45-yard lines, in the lower area, what they call the lower bowl, that would be me. I'm in section 116, row 3. So I'm at 50th yard line, third row. My PSL per seat will be $45,000.
And is that just for the right to buy those tickets down the road, or is that the total cost of the ticket?
That is just for the right, for the license. Now, for those people who want to know how the licenses work, is that would give me the right to buy that seat for the duration of whatever the lease amount of the stadium is, which is somewhere, I guess, 30 years or whatever the amount of time is. So $45,000 per seat. And then on top of that, my actual average ticket cost per seat was about $180 per seat. So if I bought all 8 tickets, I would have bought, paid him roughly about $200. Call it $200. All right. That's going to increase in my section from 180 to 380. So my ticket price will also go up 200. So now, to put it in perspective, this year I paid roughly $1,800, $1,600 for my season tickets for that one per seat. With the new PSL structure, and they haven't talked about how they break it down in terms of how you pay it out, but now I've got the $45,000 per seat, as well as now paying roughly $380 per ticket. So instead of the $1,600, we'll just call it $400 a ticket, I'm going to be paying double. So about $3,200 per seat plus the $45,000.
Okay, I'll add three quick things real quick. We do chuckle when you say those, but...
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
Right.
The perfect soundbite. Second thing, this just in from the Impact Media Finance Department. Don't ask them for $45,000. They're not going to give it to us.
Right.
And, yeah, we're not getting raises this year. In fact, we may not get paid if that's what we're after. But, and then just to clarify for everybody, my third point is he's talking about American dollars. This is not Italian lira. This is not Japanese yen. This is American dollars, 45,000 of them.
Right. And now what's so interesting about it is currently it would have cost me about $500 more per seat to be in the club level, which is considered an exclusive area, right? In the new stadium, it's actually going to be cheaper to be up in the club section than it will be to be in the lower sections. PSLs start at about $10,000 in the club section. So I could move up to the club section, say the 30th yard line, pay $10,000 per seat, and it's still the ticket price of about $340. So he's increasing ticket prices, individual ticket prices, as well as assigning these seat licenses. So it's going to be either a very extremely empty stadium or an extremely empty stadium as it stands now. I mean, that's far beyond what anybody was thinking.
Let me say this, and I'm going to add this real quickly, guys, so I know time is running out. With those type of PSLs and that licensing, I can tell you right now, 95% of this facility will be sold to corporate sponsors, period. They'll then issue that out to – they'll use that as ways to conduct business. When you see those type of numbers go up astronomically, and we're not fit for that here in Atlanta. I mean, you don't have a per capita – of an average margin of people making $100,000 a year to spend that kind of money. That's what's going to happen with it. That whole lower bowl, it'll be all corporate fees.
Absolutely. And even I can tell you guys now that the trend is we've often tried to figure out who was on that second row that owned those four seats because they would change every week, and we found out that it was owned by a corporation. So that makes sense, Coach Hill, with the playoffs coming here and soccer league coming here and all of these things. They're pushing us up to the club level, basically, and getting us out of the lower seats, getting prepared for the Super Bowl. But you know what? I'm going to have to sell a few extra cans because I may just have to hang out down there. We'll see.
Yeah, definitely so. And as we are wrapping up here, I guess the new stadium is gonna always carry the nickname that I suggested when they first when 92.9 first asked for suggestions on it. I think it should be sponsored by Krispy Kreme, and we should call it the Donut. Right now, we should call it the Donut Hole, because if you know anything about Medicare, Medicaid, we're looking at the big donut hole of ticket prices right now. We're going to fall into an odd category. But
absolutely.
That's going to do it for us this week. Before I get out of here, I do want to give a special mention and shout out to a fallen media member for sure. And the late, great Stuart Scott did pass away just a few days ago. He was very instrumental in the reason why I would watch, 4, 5, 6 hours of the same Sports Center between him and Dan Patrick, Rich Eisen, all those originals, as I called them. Stuart, you did it in a different way, and you made it work, and there never will be another one. So Definitely want to remember Stuart Scott. But for the coach, Haywood Hill, and the King ATLE, and Reggie Walker, who is going to go buy some lottery tickets here in a few minutes so he can sit in the second row again. I'm here for the Impact York. We will see you guys next week.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.